demon seeds. Spinning lies, more speeds. Says let's roll.
Time to go.
King of mountain screams.
We return to enter the arena at stake the future of freedom. Gardner Goldsmith here doing the tag team with you, conspirators. It's Liberty Conspiracy Audio, combining rigorous intellectual study with the dynamics of the hard and weird of rock and roll. As Huey Lewis said, it's hip to be square, but only if you're hip. We're now approaching 6,750 iTunes subscribers and many times that playing us online. Keep fighting the fight, my friends. Hit it like a heavy bass note. Hit it like a Townsend guitar riff. Hit it like Carl Palmer on the drums. Just keep hitting it, all right? We've got two major issues to study today. Issues that can leave you something to contemplate and disseminate. Plus, a quiver full of stories that need attention. Some of which have long-lasting importance. First, the news stories. Let's get to one about which you won't hear. Let's go Midwest for our Ohio listeners and cover a story that shows how real people are being hurt by the collective gangland group called government, how legal criminality sets itself against innocent people, in this case, with rules and regulations. Now, lest we forget, rules and regulations aren't just invisible codes of conduct mutually consented to. They're impositions that carry with them an implicit, though real, threat of violence, fines, arrests, and asset seizure if compliance is not achieved. Let's see how one Ohio family discovered this. Ernie Hancock and the gang at Freedom's Phoenix grabbed this piece of government poop and put it on display for all to see. We need an added theme here, though it'll make it sound less serious than it really is, I think. But let's go for it. It's a headline derived from WorldNet Daily. SWAT raid on food co-op. Yeah. Do it, Steve Forrest. Yeah. Do it, Rhythm Heritage. Yeah. Do it, Bob Urich. Yeah. Do it, stunt doubles who don't look anything like the actors. Yeah. SWAT. I think I used to like that show. Anyway, what lessons can be derived from this attack? And what's it all about? Well, first, let's go to the story. Here's the headline. SWAT raid on food co-op called Entrapment. Lawyer says family badgered by agent to sell eggs. Ooh, ooh, so dangerous. The article's by Bob Unruh. That's U-N-R-U-H from WorldNet Daily. A state agent from the Ohio Department of Agriculture pressured a family whose members run a food cooperative for friends and neighbors to, quote, sell him, end quote, a dozen eggs, sparking accusations of entrapment from a lawyer defending the family. The case brought by state and local authorities against a co-op run by John and Jacqueline Stowers of LaGrange, Ohio, came to a head on December 1st when police officers used SWAT tactics to burst into the home, hold family members, including children, at gunpoint, and confiscate the family's personal food supply. Incredible. Two organizations, the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund and the Buckeye Institute's legal arm, the Center for Constitutional Law, are working to defend the family. In an audio podcast posted online, Maurice Thompson of the Buckeye Institute said the family has run the Manna Storehouse, focusing mainly on organic supplies, for several years near Cleveland. The confrontation began developing several years ago when local health officials demanded the family hold a retail food license in order to run their co-op. Thompson said the family wrote a letter questioning that requirement and asking for evidence that would suggest they were operating a food store and how their private co-op was similar to Walmart. The Stowers family members simply, quote, take orders from co-op members, then divide up the food, Thompson explained. The health inspector didn't like the tone of the letter, Thompson said, and the result was that law enforcement officials planned, staged, and carried out the December 1st SWAT-style raid on the family's home. Thompson said he discussed the developments of the case with the health inspector personally. Quote, he didn't think the tone of that letter was appropriate, Thompson said. I've seen the letter. There's not anything there that's belligerent. Government officials have egos as well. The problem is when government officials have egos, they use the power of government against us. Thompson explained the genesis of the raid was a series of visits to the family by an undercover agent for the state agriculture agency. Can you believe this? He showed up at the store's residence, said Thompson, unannounced one day, and pretended to be interested in purchasing food. The family explained the co-op was private and they couldn't provide service to the stranger. The agent then returned another day, staying for 2 hours, and explained that he thought his sick mother would be helped by eggs from range-fed chickens, to which the stores had access. Now, just a point, regardless of whether or not their stipulation was that they didn't sell to outside people, even if they did, what business is it of the state to stop them? The family responded that they didn't sell food and couldn't help. When he refused to leave, the family gave him a dozen eggs and hastened his departure, Thompson explained. Despite protests from the family, the agent left some money on a counter and departed. On the basis of that transaction, the stores were accused of engaging in the retail sale of food, Thompson said.
Oh, ye gods!
He continues, you hear people scream entrapment, he said, but in this instance... He said the state agency came from nowhere and then worked to get the family involved in something that might require a license. Even that remained in dispute because of a long list of exceptions in the state law, some of which may apply in this case, he said. The organizations have filed a complaint on behalf of the family, naming the Ohio Department of Agriculture, the Lorain County General Health District, and the state's attorney general as defendants. A spokesman for the Department of Agriculture told WorldNet Daily she was unable to comment. And officials with the local health agency did not answer WorldNet daily calls to three different office numbers. All right, now what are the lessons that we can derive from this? First, this is an attack on peaceful people engaged in consensual activity. The principle applies to this market activity or any other, be it a book sale, a play, a concert, a naked dance on private property, some sort of drug sale, as much as people don't like them, an exchange for sexual activity, gambling, or a gun sale. All are volitional, all are peaceful acts, and all should operate without attack. Second, the act of licensing, the lack of which is the violation cited here, the act of licensing, as I've mentioned in Live Free or Die, is an act of aggression by the organized terrorists called the state, i.e. government, to benefit some at the expense of others through legal exclusion, creating expensive impediments and artificial hurdles to stop low-price, small competitors from entering the market to compete with the larger, politically connected big guys. These are impediments that not only force these little folk out of the market, hurting them, but they prevent consumers from being able to get lower-priced goods and services. So the third lesson is that it not only harms those trying to sell, but those trying to buy, restricting their freedom of choice and, by the way, suppressing the market mechanism of competition that not only produces lower prices, but more innovation, spurring greater productivity. And another point, by the way, this exclusion is a dampening of choice through artificially created standards and regulations. These are things the consumers could already ask for in the private market if they wanted to, not through licensing by the state, but through voluntary certification processes and private standard checking organizations, quality reviews, and, oh, God forbid, word of mouth. The overall lesson, licensing, all licensing is evil, coercive, and retards increases in our standards of living, period. Disagree? Well, make your argument right now. You can email me at libertyconspiracy@yahoo.com, and soon you'll be able to make your argument even louder at our Liberty Conspiracy Forum, beginning very soon. You'll be able to post your own opinions about these podcasts or other items that have been posted at the Liberty Conspiracy Forum. I can't wait. It's going to be terrific. Next up. Now, we told you so. Yeah, what did we tell you? Well, this is one of those moments. It's a we told you so moment featuring none other than the Obama administration.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes, the Obama administration coming up. In this case, the story we try to tell our neighbors about, the disingenuousness of the Obama campaign, when cats like Joe Biden said that raising taxes on the rich was not part of Obama's plan. Well, we said it didn't have to be back then because the Bush administration tax cuts are going to expire at the end of 2010. And guess what? Yeah, as strange as it might seem, James Axelrod finally admitted that they are aware of that. And yeah, they support it. Let's go to the article. This one comes from the New York Times after James Axelrod appeared on NBC's Meet the Press. And when Mr. Axelrod was asked about the Bush administration tax cuts, repealing them, the tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, as the New York Times describes, well, he said that whether it was repealed early or allowed to expire as scheduled at the end of 2010, the tax cut would eventually disappear. Quote, "It's going to go. It has to go." Oh, gee, that's interesting. Why didn't you talk about that, you Obamaites, before the election? Strange. All we kept hearing were quotes from people about the redistribution of wealth and how, the middle class has to be helped. I see. Oh, I see. So I guess something we suspected was correct. Not in the plan.
Doesn't have to be.
Why? Obama can get away with the deflection, essentially lying to people about the meaning of the question, will taxes go up for high earners under Obama? Yeah, they will. But remember, Biden said that lowering taxes, not taking money, was redistribution of wealth. Here, listen to this.
Okay, moving on to the next question. Senator Obama now famously told Joe the Plumber he wanted to spread his wealth around. A Gallup poll showed 84% of Americans prefer government focus on improving economic conditions and creating more jobs in the U.S. as opposed to taking steps to distribute wealth. Isn't Senator Obama's comment a potentially crushing political blunder?
Absolutely not. The only person who spread the wealth around has been George Bush and John McCain's tax policy. They have devastated the middle class.
So just you remember that being allowed to retain more of what you earn through private, consensual, free commerce with other consenting individuals, like I said, that if you are allowed to keep that, then that's redistribution of wealth. Because, of course, the people who didn't engage in those transactions are party to it somehow, and they deserve it because we're all a giant gestalt collective, as Joe Biden believes. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And it's been revealed, finally, what I tried to explain to people way back when, that the Obama people were skirting the issue of whether or not taxes were going to go up on the wealthy. Why? Because they didn't have to say it was part of Obama's plan, because the tax cuts will expire at the end of 2010. It's just simple logic, but unfortunately, none of the Obama people were honest enough to acknowledge it. It's incredible. Now, I want to turn to a great story given to me by a Cabal member, Mapchick. Mapchick, you are a lovely lady, mademoiselle. Absolutely fantastic. Check this one out, and it's a case where we got to applaud Fox News. It's actually about a week old, and I wanted to make sure that I got it in here. She says, I'm not sure if she's a Cabal member, so she can communicate with us because she's donated. She says, I'm not sure if the video will be available online, but David Asman had Judge Andrew Napolitano and the attorney who's handling the case for Fox Business Network, along with a very pissed off reporter from the D.C. Bureau of the Nightly Scorecard on this Thursday. It was a while back now. She says, it was a great discussion, and I admit to being rather thrilled by the whole idea of the news organization doing exactly what the First Amendment and the Freedom of Information Act were designed to protect. Go, press, go. What's the issue? Fox Business Channel has filed a lawsuit against the United States Treasury Department, the Treasury, over failure to provide information on the bailout funds or respond to Fox Business Channel's expedited request filed under the Freedom of Information Act. The initial request, according to Fox, filed on November 25th, sought actual data on the use of the bailout funds for American International Group and the Bank of New York Mellon. And an additional request, filed on December 1st, sought similar data on the bailout funds for Citigroup Incorporated. Fox Business Network is asking for the Treasury Department to identify, among other issues, the troubled assets purchased, any collateral extended, and any restrictions placed on these financial institutions for their participation in this program. Kevin McGee, Executive Vice President of Fox News, commented, The Treasury has repeatedly ignored our requests for information on how the government is allocating money to these troubled institutions. In a critical time like this, amidst mounting corruptions and an economic crisis, we as a news organization feel it's more important than ever to hold the government accountable. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Just fantastic to hear this. I hope they do this. So they filed a complaint in federal court in New York, and they're asking the court to make the Treasury provide the information sought by the journalists at the Fox Business Network. Good job, Fox Business. It's foxbusiness.com if you want to visit their website and compliment them. And I'm really pleased, Mapchick, that you provided that information. Now, the banks are saying that they're not going to give this information out because they are market secrets. Sort of like, you know, the secret herbs and spices of the 70 secret herbs and spices of Colonel Sanders' secret recipe, you know. So they're not going to give up the information, but the Treasury Department should give up the information. Now, the Fed is saying it's not going to give up the information itself that it's giving out. And again, the Congress really screwed up handing the Fed all this power to do whatever they want, and they're using the same excuse as the banks. So it's quite interesting. Now, to our final short news story and the first of our major lessons, the report cited at libertyconspiracy.com that an overwhelming majority of emergency room doctors who were surveyed...
Survey said, ba-boom.
Yes, they were surveyed, and in fact, nearly all who were surveyed believe cops are far too violent making arrests. Let me give you this story from the Liberty Conspiracy. All right, and it's actually kind of scary at the same time. Here's the headline. Police use excessive force, ER doctors say. Dateline Washington. In a survey of a random sample of U.S. emergency physicians, virtually all said they believe that law enforcement officers use excessive force to arrest and detain suspects. The sample included 315 respondents, while 99.8% believed excessive force is used. Almost as many, 97.8%, reported that they had managed cases that they suspected or that the patient stated had involved excessive use of force by law enforcement officers. Nearly two-thirds, 65.3%, estimated that they had treated two or more cases of suspected excessive use of force per year among their patients, according to a report of the survey published in the January 09 issue of the Emergency Medicine Journal. Let's go to the newsreel footage. Dr. Jared Stroat of the University of Washington, Seattle, in a multi-center team, also found that emergency physicians at public teaching hospitals were roughly four times more likely to report managing cases of suspected use of excessive force than those at university or community teaching emergency departments. Blunt trauma inflicted by fists or feet was the most common type of injury cited in cases of suspected use of excessive force, followed by overly tight handcuffs. Oh my, that's not a Livestrong cuff you're wearing, is it? Okay, here's the deal. As I've noted on the Liberty Conspiracy, we don't know how many arrests don't even see suspects going to the hospital, so the picture is not complete here. But imagine you're an engineer. If you've got a problem, a widespread problem, not just in one use of a system that you've created, but all over the place where it's being used, would you think that the various parts that were put into place, i.e. the cops, in this case, as people, are the problem? And if you're crazy enough to only look at the micro level and not the macro level, the system that is going wrong, how do you propose getting a long-term fix? Replacing some rough and corrupt cops? There will be more because you haven't fixed the system. You can't fix it because it's irreparable. It's a government monopoly, insulated from competition and immune from large changes because there is no market competition, no addressability through answering to the consumer. You don't like the police force? Try replacing it. And for comparison, imagine if these reports came out about the private security forces at Disney World, SeaWorld, and Busch Gardens. The owners of those resorts would act immediately to restore their reputations, to please the customers, to drop the forces they'd hired and hire new ones. In fact, just the openness to competition inspires the forces to do their best to not screw up, to be open to inspection, and prosper through pleasing the customer. But guard, government doesn't protect us, who will? All right, let me ask skeptics. How is it possible that Disney is safe inside without a government monopoly police force providing protection, huh? How does that happen? You mean we can't be like Disney World? Government police protection is a fraud, an expensive one, and probably one of the biggest, most widely accepted frauds ever perpetrated on man. It's gangsterism, a protection racket. What if I didn't want to pay? Or what if I didn't want to pay the amount that the majority of voters demanded that I pay? I'll be forced to pay, like a mafia would do. And if you're unwilling to walk with me into the peaceful land of anarcho-capitalism here, then at least just think about this. Shoot for small competing governments so people can escape. Now, we're at break time, so grab a snack, sit tight, listen to our sponsors, some music, and come on back.
Now you can own a piece of history, commemorating the day the world changed forever. Be one of the first to reserve historic victory. The commemorative plate honoring the election of the 44th president, America's first African-American commander-in-chief. His confident smile and kind eyes are an inspiration to us all. This priceless work of art features a triumphant president-elect surrounded by the American flag and spectacular celebration fireworks. Historic victory is crafted of fine porcelain and richly accented in 22-karat gold trim. The election date and inscription, "Change Has Come," are displayed in gold text on this first-issue collector's plate. The back displays the seal of the American Historic Society and documents the historic electoral and popular vote totals on Election Day. This certificate of authenticity from the American Historic Society promises you'll own a collectible of the highest quality and integrity. It comes with a display stand for any desktop or curio case, or proudly hang it on any wall. This issue has been strictly limited to just 65 firing days. After that, the die will be destroyed forever. Due to the unprecedented demand, there is a strict limit of 2 victory plates per caller.
I never thought this day would come.
And now we own a piece of history.
Our generation has spoken, and now this special treasure will be cherished as a prized family heirloom.
For generations to come.
Yes, you can own a piece of history authorized by the American Historic Society with bonus display stand and certificate of authenticity for the first issue price of only $19.99. Call now.
Folks, we thought it would be a wise idea to look into the future, to gaze into the metaphysical, and there's no better connection, no better way for us to peer into the mystical realm than to contact the world's foremost New Age spiritual expert, Mitsu Hitachi, Master of Feng Shui. Hello, Gardner. I am here with you now. I am Mitsu Hitachi, Master Feng Shui. Yes, yes, I know, Mitsu. I appreciate you gracing our airwaves with your famous presence. I know you're a busy man out there in Hollywood.
Ah, yes, very busy. I recently correct energy problems in home of Kirstie Alley. My ideas help her lose weight.
Did you move her sofas and chairs to do this?
Oh, no, no. We, remove second refrigerator from bedroom and snacks from under bed.
Got it, got it. Well, Mitsu, what can you tell us? You're connected to the metaphysical. What can you predict? Mitsu? Mitsu? What's that noise?
Ah, Mitsu will make prediction by moving furniture. Get proper chi.
You must be pretty strong, Mitsu.
Of course. I am Mitsu Hitachi, master of feng shui. I also have able assistance of master apprentice, Ha Rock Garden.
Rock Garden?
Yes, a very good apprentice. Lift recliner, Rock Garden. Place recliner on top of TV tray. Yes, now, Mitsu Hitachi, tune into energy lines. Proper chi established. Tap into spirit world.
What do you see, Mitsu?
Mitsu Hitachi, master of feng shui, see future. Mitsu see something coming for listeners.
What? What is it?
Mitsu see now. Mitsu see future career. Sofas aligned. Mitsu see commercial break.
This program is brought to you by Freekeen.com. Freekeen.com features audio, video, and blogs chronicling the transition to a voluntary society. Freekeen.com also has comments and discussion forums so you can be heard. Freekeen.com.